Welcome, friends, to the United Lodge of Theosophists in Philadelphia. We meet here as a group on a cyclical basis to support each other in the study of these ancient ideas. The whole focus of the philosophy is to put forth the idea that universal brotherhood can be and is a fact in nature, that it will connect us all, and with the main goal, hopefully, of bringing peace throughout the world, because then we will all know that we are all part of that one deific essence. And we do not have any dues or fees. We feel as though these ideas are your birthright, and as such, the motivation should come from within, from your higher nature, as to how much you do want to devote or not. But we do ask that when you come, to just listen and letting that higher nature open your heart to this philosophy, because you will know yourself and your neighbor as a spiritual being. So here in Philadelphia, we have two meetings a week. Periodically throughout the year, we have some special meetings. And we are sustained entirely by voluntary contributions. So whatever you feel you want to give, as long as it's given with a good motive, it is worth millions. So today, our class starts at 11, runs until 12. The building opens up at 10:30, and the book table is open before and after not only this meeting, but our Wednesday night meeting as well. And the book table is Straight Line Theosophical Ideas, and it doesn't, we just charge for shipping and handling and printing. We make no profit off of them, because, as we said, that it's your birthright and you shouldn't have to pay for anything above and beyond the printing and shipping. On Wednesdays, we are still in the Ocean of Theosophy by Mr. William Q. Judge. The class runs from 7:30 until 8:30. The library opens at 5:15 and is open until 7:15. And we are working on the after-death states, and we believe it's the last part of the chapter on Devakan. So this, we are going to be starting a new quarter, and the new pamphlet is behind the usher's chair. So we are finishing up today with March. We're going to be looking at the origin of genius. And next week, the overall title for the month of April is Psychism and Spirituality, and the class will be looking at the symbolism and meaning of Easter. And this is a very interesting class because it looks at the Easter ideas and symbols in a very different manner than what mainstream faiths look at Easter. So it's just it's an interesting class. So today, the way the class will be held today, we will start off, we're going to break it, it's a panel, we're going to break down the idea of the, we even forgot what this, the origin of genius just went blank. We're looking at the origin of genius, and it's very different when we're looking at the idea of genius when you're looking at it from a theosophical viewpoint. And So we're going to look at the idea of genius in this talk, just the two different kinds of genius. Most people think it's just one, but we're looking at two different kinds. And since we're looking at the origin of genius, the second speaker will be looking at that idea of reincarnation and how that fits in with this idea of genius. So to begin with, let's just look at a definition of what genius is. The dictionary says exceptional natural capacity of intellect and an IQ over 140. So this is from just a regular dictionary, but you'll find out during the class that it's a very different idea that theosophy will look at in regards to it. And most ideas of genius is that it was an accident, accident of birth. It was just by chance. They even look at it as an abnormality of the mind. And they even think that it's something that God graced them with. But we all know that when theosophy looks at this idea of genius, that no matter what a person expresses, whether it be physical, mental, or psychic abilities, that it all has to do with what has gone before in a previous lifetime, and that is being brought forward. Now, we can look at the idea of, when we're looking at genius, people that come to mind are like Edison, Newton, folks like that, or even musicians, Shakespeare. We just think that these guys are genius but it's only in one aspect of their lives. So we have to look at the idea, are these true geniuses? Because we're looking at the idea of a true genius as opposed to an artificial one. And there's a, in the bookcase there, there's a really good article by Madame Blavatsky called Genius, and it just really covers everything that we think in a nutshell of what genius is. And she makes a statement, that which makes one mortal a great man and of another a vulgar, silly person is the quality and makeup of the physical shell or casing and the adequacy or inadequacy of the brain and body to transmit it. So mainly, we're looking at the idea of karma here then, and how it affects and how it affects the form's capacity to express any of these ideas as a genius. Because we know that there are people who, you know, their minds are wonderful, but physically they can't do anything about it. And so this is where being checked by karma and expressing that idea of genius is very poignant. So when we're looking then at great genius, she says, if true and innate and not merely an abnormal expansion of our human intellect. So when we're looking at great genius, it's not just in one area. It is of a higher nature, and it involves the entire, the form is ready, the mind connects to the brain is ready, and it is a more involved, innate type of genius. And everybody has this innate idea and seed in their minds, not just the brain, but the minds. And we have to look at the brain as being a vehicle for the mind. So the genius idea is trying to be transmitted through the brain to the form. And if it's not, as we said, with karma, it can prevent the form from expressing this genius totally. But in a true genius, it is from that higher self, not the lower self. And we're looking in genius, we're looking at using the higher three aspects of our nature, which are reincarnates from lifetime to lifetime, not the lower, the four quaternary. So it's experience then that will encourage that genius from lifetime to lifetime. And it is said that with artificial genius, that ego, the reincarnating ego, from lifetime to lifetime to lifetime, has been focused on this one area. Now, we can say that maybe in the future, a personality of this type may at some point become a full-blown true genius, but we don't know that for certain. So true genius needs but an opportunity to spring forth into existence. And this is all due to experience, what that ego is bringing forward. And the genius piece is located in the mind. And we say that everything is dual in nature, so the lower mind is working with that idea of artificial genius and the higher mind with true genius. On the other hand, artificial genius, so often confused with the former or true genius, and which in truth is but the outcome of long studies and training. So that's what the whole idea is. The artificial genius in this lifetime still needs to practice. It still needs to work on whatever it is focused on, whereas with a true genius, that is not necessary. And artificial genius will remain attached to the material form, whereas with the true genius, it is only using the form as a vehicle for that expression. Artificial genius will ever remain the slave of its body, and that body, owing to its unreliability and the natural tendency of matter to confusion, will not fail to lead even the greatest genius, so-called, back into its own primordial element, which is chaos again, or evil. So this is where the idea of the artificial genius still being attached to the material world. And we'll just end with this one reading. This is such a good article. We hope people will get it. Thus, between the true and the artificial genius, one born from the light of the immortal ego, the other from the evanescent will-o'-the-wisp of the terrestrial or purely human intellect and the animal soul, there is a chasm to be spanned only by him who aspires ever onward, who never loses sight, even when the depths of matter of that guiding star, the divine soul and mind, or what we call buddhi manas, the latter does not require, nor does the former, cultivation. So we will now hear the second part.
Henry Ford, a visionary and an agreed-upon genius in his fields of endeavor, which were manufacturing and business, set such a standard that many of today's modern businessmen could do well to learn from his ideas and his philosophy on the subject. was quoted as saying, "I adapted the theory of reincarnation when I was 26. Genius is experience. Some seem to think that it is a gift or talent, but it is the fruit of long experience in many lives." That quote exhibits an understanding of the inherent justice in the universe. Where in nature do you ever see something coming from nothing? It's not to be found. An investment is required for every advancement made, just as a seed is required for every plant. Time and desire must have been invested for the results that are current now, whatever they may be. Genius or idiot, there was some investment that brought us to this end. That's not to say that we don't have certain inherited attributes from our physical surroundings. If those of us who visit a doctor regularly are often asked, "Did anyone in your family have cancer?" Because they realize that you share that genetic breakdown in your body. If someone in your family had cancer, it's a good possibility that you might have it. And often they will check periodically to see if it has surfaced yet. So yes, there are certain things that you do that do travel along the physical path, but they only travel along the physical path. It only goes so far as certain characteristics, but not the character itself. Napoleon Bonaparte, we'd like to call him for our second witness. The military genius, one of history's most impressive figures, was reported to have been heard saying to his troops, "I am Charlemagne. Do you know who I am? I am Charlemagne." The military genius in this man, materialism declares, was entirely due to the fact that his father was a soldier and his mother was a camp follower. That might be enough in a universe that depends on luck, happenstance, or chance. But in a universe that law is the foundation of, we have to look further. Napoleon, no doubt, as he himself declared, was Charlemagne, reincarnated, and perhaps before that, he might have even been Hannibal, as one of his biographers noticed and suggested how profoundly his character resembled that of the great Carthaginian. An interesting side note about this Charlemagne-Napoleon entity was that Charlemagne established the Holy Roman Empire, and Napoleon disassembled the same, proving that he had a chance to do a do-over. He undid what he had done in a previous life. Another military genius, General George S. Patton, had this to say on the subject: "So as through a glass darkly, the age-long life I see, where I fought in many guises, many names, but always me." We see over and over again, it's not as though this idea of genius sprouts up and is unsubstantiated. We see from the people themselves, those who are affected, those whose lives exhibit this idea of genius, testify to the fact of its origin. You look at the parents of some of these people, they're nothing, you know, humble beginnings, but they can give birth to an offspring who can actually turn the world around, as did Napoleon, as did Edison. So we have to listen to these people. They say things that if we listen to their military and their political ideas, to their achievement and witness their achievements in business, why can, how can we not listen to what they say about where this came from, where, how they found this in themselves? Now, the next example that I want to introduce is illustrates the attention that this subject we're speaking of this morning has. Often, when we come here, we speak of things that are almost esoteric, and if you walk outside this room and down the street and speak to someone on this corner, they often wouldn't know what you're speaking of. You know, they, no response. In fact, a lot of us come here because this is a place where we can find like-minded souls, whether we're in agreement or not. We might argue with them, but the subject we argue over, we find important enough to want to talk about it, to want to hear what others say, to do some research on it. And this is brought to you in that mindset. During the 70s, someone wrote a biography about Michael Jackson, and in which the idea was made that Michael Jackson was the reincarnation of the musical genius Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. Now, the idea was put forth with an abundance of evidence to support, including, but not only. Both were born, the seventh child, in a very musical family. Both were musically talented from a very, very early age. Mozart had mastered his first keyboard piece just before his fifth birthday. He was the toast of Viennese society by the age of seven and soon became a child star all over Europe. By age eight, Jackson had already taken over the singing lead in the vocals of the Jackson Five, and he was deemed a protege with overwhelming musical gifts and promises. Both missed out on a normal childhood, spending the entire time immersed in a punishing regime of practicing, touring, and performing, all imposed by a strict father. Mozart's father believed that it was his God-given duty to exhibit his talented children throughout Europe, giving at least one performance a day. Though this almost cost the boy his life on several occasions, Michael Jackson was physically, verbally, and emotionally abused by his father from a young age, enduring whippings and beatings. However, he also credited his father's strict discipline as playing a large part in his success. Both later fell out with their father and went their separate ways. Mozart's ambivalent attitude towards his father continued to dominate his private and professional life as an adult. Despite periods of great financial success, both were prone to extravagant overspending and later struggled with debt. Both maintained a childlike personality into adulthood. Both enjoyed dressing flamboyantly and keeping a variety of pets. Also, Michael Jackson used an alias when he contributed a song, "Happy Birthday, Lisa," to an episode of The Simpsons, which may give some indication of what he thought of this idea of him being a reincarnated Mozart. he signed the credit that he signed. He didn't put down Michael Jackson. He put down W.A. Mozart. So, back to the subject. So is the world governed by chance? Is character simply a product of heredity? If so, then genius, like everything else, must arise by luck. But if law rules this universe, if seasons follow one another in an orderly fashion and lawful fashion, if the earth revolves around the sun and all the other patterns that we witness that testify to a universe of law and stability, then we must rule out chance and luck and relegate chance to the realms of superstition. Even this body of knowledge, now known as theosophy, has returned to humanity in the late 19th century after laying dormant and out of the vision of the majority of Western man. We now find it the center of attention in the electronic town square, being weighed and judged and found to be of genius stock and a promise of help for modern humanity.
In the back.
The first speaker gave a quote on genius tending toward typical genius that we were aware of in the world, tending towards materialism and being dark and what was that? Well, I guess that was a wonderful quote. We wondered where, we've read it before, but we don't remember where it comes from.
Well, it's in HPB's article, Genius.
Okay.
Did you want?
Yeah, could you read it again? Because it's really a great quote.
Oh, well, why don't you, let me look for it. So why don't you pick on somebody?
Well, and we were just saying, well, part of that is we were thinking about, like, general patents that he said that he had fought many times before. But we think that he and the typical genius is attached to the personality. So that's the personality keeps coming back, maybe more refined, more intelligent, but that a spiritual genius wouldn't be attached to that personality.
No, the idea of a real genius is that their motivation is from that higher nature. And a true genius, it's not just the one area, like with Patton. We don't know. He says he was reincarnated. We forget from whom. Who was that? But with a true genius, it expresses itself not just on the mundane level, like being a wizard with war strategy, that kind of thing. It is a more... You know, they're looking at, like, Buddha was considered to be a true genius because that genius was expressed on the physical, mental, and the psychic plane. So with Patton, then, it seems as though he, you know, we don't know really that much about him other than his war abilities. But the artificial genius does have that one pointedness that he has to keep working on and working on. So they're so attached to whatever their topic, their subject is, to the exclusion many times. You know, we knew a physician that was considered a genius in chemotherapy, but he couldn't make the head of a bed go up and down on a patient. You know, when he was focused. But that was it. That was his whole life. Whereas our true genius is more globally looking at things.
To add to that, there's a tendency among people anything that you do well, you want to keep doing. Therefore, that which you do well becomes extremely good. A good basket weaver becomes a great basket weaver. Not particularly a great husband, not particularly a great friend, not particularly a great citizen, but a great basket weaver. That is the problem that you see with a lot of the things that we speak of as genius. Often when you look at these people, you find out that they have idiosyncrasies and behavior that is odd, to say the least. And that's because that one point has been developed to the exclusion of everything else. Whereas when you look at true genius, everything is developed. Everything is lifted. They're like a light that goes up and lights up the whole of the human experience, lights up that whole room from corner to corner, from ceiling to floor. Yes, sir.
Well, a number of examples have been given of great genius in a specific area, even artificial genius. Could you give some examples that we could understand of true genius in history, or real genius in that sense?
Very easy to do. The really hard part is to pick one, and I'm going to pick one of my favorites right now, and that would be HPB. If just a cursory look through the secret doctrine, now I realize that she didn't write this, but she was the instrument through which it became into being. But if you look through the secret doctrine, just a cursory look, not to read the whole thing, just look at it, and you see all of the subjects of science that she touches on, all of the subjects of ethics, ideas that are so diverse and so profound and so far-reaching, it's almost impossible to think that one person could contain this, even as an instrument, in their mind and not just completely explode. She has lifted, and I say this, but there's quite a bit of verification, she has lifted up almost every department of learning available to man at this time. A follow-up?
Well, might we say then as a more general statement that those, whether we call them Mahatmas or adepts or saviors, those great personages in history, the Jesus, the Buddha, the Krishna, those people that that have perfected all their nature and have the ability to exert the full powers of the soul in whatever direction they need to, at will, with the right motive, with the right power, with the right skill, they're the ideal, the real genius that we're speaking about.
That's true, yes. Genius. That is the true genius, not that spotlighted genius that hits on one point of human activity and takes it to a new level, but that which lifts up the whole of human activity. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sorry.
Thank you. And the interesting thing is that when we look at the artificial genius, their contributions to literature, to science, the arts, all of that, I mean, we're not saying that they are, that it's the, you know, I'm sorry, just getting a little tongue-tied here. Those contributions that they have made are definitely, they've come at the right time. So they're bringing forward their talents, and when they do that, you know, it's what we need. I mean, so much of what progress has happened has become from them. So we're not putting them down. It's just that we want to make sure that people are aware that there's two different types of genius. And as we said in our talk, it could be that maybe these people are on their way to, at some point, being a full-fledged true genius.
You mentioned HPB being a true genius. HPB was trained by the masters for a number of years. And there were other examples in India, for example, the yogis, when these people were trained, they can, you know, recite pi to whatever number of decimals. They have the true and full connection with their higher self. And, you know, they may live humbly, but they are capable of doing all the things that what we call geniuses do. My point being is that with proper guidance and studies and teachings, these people, we can all become geniuses. And as Casey said, you know, through meditation, we need to learn to meditate just like we have learned to walk and talk at one time. And if we were to do that, then we can learn to make that connection with our higher self, and then we would have the same aspects that all these yogis and other, you know, enlightened beings have.
Everybody has the germ of a true genius in them. But it is only after extensive lives where, you know, people are sacrificing to the higher good. True genius cannot be forced. It is something that has to be learned over lifetimes. If someone's brain, physical form, psychically, they're not ready, a true genius cannot be forced. If a person is not in that stage of evolution where that would be appropriate. HPB came into this world with abilities that were noted from the time she was a child. So granted, we would feel more comfortable with the word taught by the masters. They gave her information, but if her brain were not ready to accept and understand and be able to put forth these ideas, she would have been the wrong one. So the form has to be ready. The psychic nature has to be ready, and especially the brain. Everything is checked by karma. Both HPB and Mr. Judge physically were not the healthiest people, but their psychic nature and their intellect were such that they were able to push through that, those a less than perfect form. So you have, one has to be ready to accept that true genius. It is, from what we've read, it doesn't seem like it's an easy life. But the form has to be ready at the same time. In the back?
We have trouble with the term artificial genius. If by that term we mean development in one direction, as was mentioned, a couple of names came up that at the right time they came along. The scientist who first split the atom broke open scientific minds all over the globe. So why is that an artificial expression of genius, where the inner is the true expression of genius?
Artificial is a troubling term, but it's applied here because the idea of a true, full genius has to be lifted up. It has to be differentiated from what we think of when we hear the word genius. If there was two words that we could use, genius and super genius, perhaps that would work better. But it doesn't. It's not like that. Consequently, true genius is that genius who lights up the whole of human experience, not just a portion of it. It's not to diminish that genius who lights up a portion, whether it's a musician or a painter or actor or statesman or a businessman. It's not diminishing, but that he is in no way able to compete. Henry Ford was not able to compete with Buddha and his influence over humanity's destiny.
Was this a follow-up?
Real quickly, but that expression that Henry Ford put forth is not artificial.
It's not.
It's a real thing, and the knowledge that it took and the development, albeit in one direction, is not artificial. It's the same amount of work, but maybe it's because it's on this plane that we're calling it artificial, because it almost sounds like you're not giving due to the one who spent lifetimes finally coming up with the idea for the car and the shape and the engine and so forth.
Yeah, it's a difficult word to look at. We were thinking using like lower genius, but we were trying to figure out why she used the term artificial. If we're looking at a comparison between true genius and artificial, we think the term artificial is comparing to true genius, whereas it's not true genius. If somebody else wants to hit on that. Yeah.
Well, we know that we have a higher and a lower nature, and that our higher nature is a permanent aspect of ourselves, and our lower nature passes away to lifetime. So that genius, which is on the spiritual plane, or in our higher nature, becomes permanent, becomes a permanent part of our nature. And that by devoting oneself to his spiritual side, which is the more permanent, rather than working on the physical, which is transitory. So we would think that this true and artificial is really related to that. Mm-hmm. And that, and one other thing, you know, you said that Mahatmas teach us. And I think it says in one of the HPP articles is that they don't teach us. We have to learn. But they simply adjust, make adjustments in our nature, so that we can move forward in the right direction. But they cannot interfere. So, genius is something which I think when we come to these rooms, we're striving for that, but not for ourselves, but for humanity. And once one does that, everything takes on a whole new meaning. And that's why the Bhagavad Gita is such an important dialogue to read and to understand, because that talks about genius and how to get there.
This is from The Ocean. Higher manas, if able to act, becomes what we sometimes call genius. If completely mastered, then one may become a god. And it goes on to say, but memory continually presents pictures to lower manas, and as a result is that the higher is obscured. Sometimes, however, along the pathway of life, we do see here and there men who are geniuses or great seers and prophets. In these higher powers of manas are active, and the person illuminated. Such were the great sages of the past, men like Buddha, Jesus, Confucius, Zoroaster, and others. But you can see the difference of that class of genius and the class of Patton or Edison or Michael. It's a whole different game. It's like an amateur playing with full-blown professional athletes. It's two different things. I do have a problem with the word artificial too, but I'm sure that if we examined it, it was the right word chosen at the right time for the right meaning. Yes, sir.
Well, the word artificial and the context in which HPB uses it only in that article is something that appears to be real, but isn't. And in that article, she's referring to those people who have tremendous talent in a particular area, whether it's dancing or music or the intellect, but the light, the inspiration for it comes from the development, the qualities of the personality. So whether it's the intellectual or the psychic or the physical abilities. And she makes that distinction between real genius, the light of which comes from the immortal soul. So we might have artificial geniuses who are idiot savants or autistic or individuals like Blind Tom who show amazing abilities, but it's all from the qualities of the personality. It's not the real genius. It looks like the real thing, but it isn't.
Thank you.
Yeah, the idea of the individuality as opposed to the personality, the individuality is what is reincarnated from life to life, and this is where the true genius inspiration resides, as opposed to the personality, which is transient and is focused mainly on a material level. Follow up?
Yeah, follow up. But just because we said that something is from the personality doesn't mean that the ego had not been working for lifetimes to develop a personality in which that particular talent would come through. But it's only coming from the personality at that point, not the heart.
Thank you.
So then the distinction between the genius that's developed in an artificial way that comes through a particular personality in a lifetime as a result of personal personalities in previous lifetimes is that it's not coming through, the source of it is not coming through the immortal ego, but it would seem probably the talents mm-hmm. are coming back into this personality through the skandhas that are waiting the arrival.
Yes, we should have brought in the idea of skandhas. Those are the tendencies that come through from lifetime to lifetime. And it's with the true genius, we're looking at it's being that particular brain over the course of time with different brains has been able to be open to the promptings of the higher nature. Whereas with the artificial genius, we're looking at still there's a blockage between the mind and the brain, the physical brain, for a total expression. Again, checked by karma. I'm sorry.
The chair used a word just now, and that word was focus, which brings to mind a lens. Now, we've heard of terms such as a wide-angle lens, a narrow lens, long focal length. Could it be a reference to the idea of universal brotherhood, oneness, and that if all men work together because of their fraternal relationship, would that improve things in the world, not only in a particular locality but all over? Would that be then a way of looking at that term genius, the universal point of view?
Well, the idea with the true genius is that the focus is universal brotherhood. Maybe not in those particular terms, but that all the reason for the expression of this true genius has to do with that they're looking at a universal rather than a particular type of viewpoint. And indeed, there have been those people that we mentioned, and we were wondering in regards to Leonardo da Vinci, We know that he was an incredible artist, but he also came up with some mechanical ideas. And we personally don't know what the rest of his life was like. But, I mean, he certainly, with his mechanical ideas, we know that they were certainly before his time in regards to those developments.
Incidentally, too, when you speak of, there are quite a few people who we might pin the term genius on, but when we look closer at them, often we find that they excel in one thing, but they were woefully lacking in others. Prejudices and hatreds and other things that were dragged along with them. We can look at products that we think of as genius and look at the people who put these products together and find out that it's hard to believe that they did this. I'm treading lightly here, but when you look at the Declaration of Independence and the Constitution and these documents, which are almost sacred, which are milestones in humanity's history, and then you study the men who put these things together, it's often hard to believe that they could have done this, that they had moral fiber to do these things. They said one thing while doing something completely opposite. And you look at it and you say, how did they do this? How could they come up with this wonderful document, this document that opens the door to a golden age for humanity, while at the same time working in opposition to its true manifestation? And that's on that particular level. But you look at a lot of these things and you find out that often the offering or the person isn't 100%. That is the difference also between artificial genius and true genius. Yes, sir.
With the idea of universal brotherhood, if we do look back in history, we see those beings who try to show that we're all connected, in particular Plato, one of the greatest minds, they still study him today. Pythagoras, Euclid, you have Paracelsus, you have Ammonius Saccas, you have Plotinus, you have Porphyry, you know, Imbricus. I mean, these Neoplatonists, they say they were so pure that they, you know, that they had really joined with their higher self several times during their lifetime. So we have examples, and that what makes it so helpful is that they're part of us. That's part of us, that is all possible for us. It only takes will and imagination.
That's an interesting idea, is that we are spiritually on the same ground as all those great personages that were just mentioned, that our egos are all the same, and that it's only the expression that we've been talking all along that makes it different. But it's comforting to know that in essence we are all the same, and it's just our karmic lessons that we have to learn if we're going to be able to express it or not. In the back?
Well, we think the crux of the problem is in defining genius is the limitation of English. It's like a blunt instrument, whereas Sanskrit was a finely tuned machine or tool. And also, as is said, we are like warring and trading. We're warriors, we're traders. And the Theosophical movement was put forth in 1875 as a countervailing force to inject spiritual ideas. So it's going to take time, obviously. One of the predictions is that Sanskrit will be the language of the future, and so. But it's a real problem. English is the problem, we think, and that creates all the confusion when talking about English. I mean, about genius.
Anyway. Thank you. Did you have a?
Yes. Well, I think it's reiterated through the philosophy that everything begins now. That that the world that we want has to be in our imagination. We have to have ideas that encourage that in us, and that the expression of all that, it's like it says in the Gita, we're in a battle right now, and we're on the beginning of that path, and that battle everyone is having it with their higher and their lower self. Mm. And you know, we are told that we need to conquer those passions and desires and everything, but we need to be in control of them, not the other way around, right, that they control us. And that's the beginning of the path to perfectibility.
Yeah, and just the knowledge of knowing that that is what we have to do.
Now.
Thank you.
Regarding what was said regarding the founding documents and all, those men who wrote it, they didn't come up with those ideas. Those ideas, the idea of America, had been rolling forward for centuries before it was ever put on paper. So we should separate the ideas from the men and recognize, perhaps, and respect the effort that the men went through to present those ideas, because, of course, a prerequisite to present lofty ideals was to be a perfected human being, then none of us have any business presenting theosophical ideas. But at the same time, you've got to give them credit, because when they presented those ideas, they did so, they put it on paper, and they signed their name to it, knowing that if they're found out, they're going to be hung. Would we do the same thing for theosophy?
Thank you.
Could you say the same thing for theosophy? Is that what you're saying?
Would we do the same thing for theosophy?
Give up
knowing that we would be hung, would we still promulgate theosophy? It's just this.
I believe in my heart that we probably have in the past time. But that's not able to be proved. And the point is not that the documents, there was anything wrong with the documents or how long they were in the processes of coming into being, but the idea of a document that is surely a hand of genius, surely, you know, carved from an idea of brotherhood being presented by men who were holding other men slaves and annihilating a whole nation is in opposition one to the other. And it can't be. I mean, there's no way that you can say, well, that makes sense. At least there's no way I can say it. We've come upon now.
You went.
Hmm?
Yeah.
Yep. We. This is over for this for the day. Thank you so much. I hope we can see you on Wednesday.